Ash, go with the epilogue.
Oh God. There isn't any, is there? No, there's no, not. There aren't any.
There aren't any.
Hey, we're back. The Green Team Malazans back together for a short episode on Steven Erikson's Blood Follows, the first tale of Balkalyn and Corval Broach.
One night, and one night only, we're back in town.
I wouldn't say one night only.
Yeah, and the rest of the series, probably.
Which is much better than this, I promise.
Yes. I did enjoy reading it, but it wasn't funny. It was barely a chuckle, and I didn't expect that after the Healthy Dead and Crackbot Trail had me, like, reduced to tears laughing. So
yeah, let's go with our impressions. This is, like, I read it my, like, fourth time through.
Oh, man, I can't imagine wanting to read this four times.
I mean, I really liked it. I just, actually, I liked it a lot, especially my second read that I finished seconds before getting on with you guys. Hmm. Second read this week, to be clear. But yeah, Janeth said, or who are you again?
Janeth.
Janeth. Okay. Like Janeth said, like, it's just not very funny. And that's kind of why I like the rest of the Balkalyn and the Corval Broach novellas.
See, here's the problem. You didn't have the voices that I had in my head as I was reading.
That might be it. I did listen to, the audiobook, which is new. And I thought he did an excellent job.
Oh, yeah. I reread, so I started it on Kindle until you told me there was an audiobook. And I reread what I read on Kindle on audio, and stuff that wasn't even making me smile was making me chuckle because the delivery on the audiobook was so good.
I highly recommend the audiobook. I thought he did an excellent job. I wish I could tell you his name, but yeah, it's great.
I will say, if anything was suitable for Muppets, I think this is probably the series.
Yes.
Could you explain more?
No. You either see it or you don't, Yuren. Come on.
I can't say that I do.
I don't know. I think it'd be fun just like having a Muppet pop off screen playing, you know, Corval Broach. And
I'm just imagining like intestines and
yeah, mm-hmm. and like Muppet intestines.
Yeah, it would just be like red streamers. You know?
I think it would fit the tone really well.
Or red yarn.
All right. As a detective story, I think this actually works really well. And I enjoy that aspect. I like gold a lot.
As
a comedy, which is what I come to expect from Balkalyn and Corval Broach, I don't want to call it unfunny, because the funny parts I thought were funny, but it's just, I don't know, kind of jokes were lacking.
I'm going to interject. To me, this felt extremely D&D. This felt like by far the most D&D story that I've seen Erikson tell at the moment. Like, you have these funky things happening. You have the liches. You have the. It's an interesting setting, but
very interesting setting. That's my favorite part, actually.
Yeah, it feels transplanted directly from an RPG session.
A short campaign.
Yeah,
like a city that's built on barrows, and there's just ghosts everywhere, and specters, and shades, and
mm-hmm.
towers filled with screaming.
Yeah, it felt almost not Malazan to me. Like, you know, like the magic is even feels different to me. Like, there isn't a heavy emphasis on, for example, runes in the rest of Malazan, or like preset trap magic, or I mean, like, yeah, liches are a classic D&D thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Although, as you'll see in the next installment, which picks up right where this one leaves off. I won't spoil it, but I will just tease it. The liches here are nothing like D&D liches.
Yeah, I believe that. In this story, they function very similarly, though, I think.
When you get to see what's in the box more closely, it's not... Because the lich is what's in the box, right? And he opens it at the end. Yeah.
I mean, he sees like a flesh abomination that Corval Broach put together.
I'm pretty sure that is the lich in the...
Is it?
In the next one. I mean, unless I'm misremembering.
The impression I got at the end of this book is that the creature in the box is what Corval Broach has been putting together the entire time, which is what he considers to be his child.
Yes.
Which is a pretty different concept. Yeah, I agree, that's a different concept than than what liches tend to be. But in the city itself, there are liches that exist that seem like D&D liches to me.
Oh, I guess I missed that.
With a bit of
ice.
Yeah, because they messed with they talked with the spirits.
Yeah.
It was actually pretty funny when the spirit comes and he's talking to Gold. He's like, "My master." And like he keeps going on title after title after title. And Gold's like, "Shut up." He's like, "Dude, if you didn't interrupt me, I could be finished already."
That was funny. Yeah. Okay, that was
pretty funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was like one of the two funny moments in this little story.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't say two.
I think for somebody who, like, this was my first time reading it, I didn't really have much of expectations. I was just like, what is this story? I mean, I know the character, like two of the character, well, technically three. Three of the characters that were going to show up, right? Mancy and then obviously the titular characters. But I had no idea where it was going to be set. I had no idea what the plot was going to be, like nothing. So for me reading it, it was just like, okay, like I'm back in the Malazan world. But I think like as Ash said, it didn't feel like it could have been just its own thing. Mm-hmm. Like it didn't have to be Malazan. And then once I realized, oh, this is a like murder mystery, even though I know who the murderer is.
It's like a man, but not a man. Who could that be?
Well, I've read Memories of Ice before.
But like, you know, reading it from the detective perspective, like seeing how he thinks and how he would figure it out. And then like finally meeting Bacalane and Corbo Broach like much later than I thought they would show up. It was fun. Like, it was fun reading through it. It took a little bit for me to get in the mindset of, like, reading this while I was also reading Star Wars. But I wasn't expecting, like, Monty Python kind of funny. But there were moments where it was just like, huh, okay, I see.
The guy getting cucked by ghosts? That's funny.
That was funny.
Like Gold goes into what was it, a bar or something, and he's like, I get there, I get home, and I see my wife with like three or four ghosts, and they're moaning and moaning.
Yeah,
she was moaning too.
She wanted more.
That's really funny. Or what I liked about this is as a detective story, what do you expect from detective stories? You follow one guy and he's trying to solve a thing, even though you know there's some dramatic irony. We know who it is and we know what's going on because we've read Memories of Ice. I'd be interested in hearing like from somebody who hadn't read anything else and this is just their introduction. But I think what stands out for a lot of detective stories are just a really interesting cast of characters. And I think this has that. Like the two sisters, Mercy and...
Mince.
Yeah, Mince and Mercy. And
that was funny. I thought that was funny. Yeah.
Mercy, the one who's very healthy.
Yeah. Mercy, complete debauchery. And Mince, she's vegetarian. She goes for a run every day.
She's got one tooth left.
Yeah,
she's a complete hag.
She's just an old hag. She's, and at the end of the story,
and she's in her early 30s.
Yeah,
36.
She gets the last line in the book before the partnership too, because after the convergence of everybody coming back together, and then the maid dying in the street, and she's like, "See what comes from a life of ice."
Yes. Also, her name is pretty ironic because her name is Mince. She's vegetarian. Mince pies used to be made from meat, but now they are vegetarian. Well, actually, they're not technically vegetarian because they have beef. Like cow fat in it.
I always thought mince pies were always meat pies.
No, mince pies are like dried fruit.
Are you sure that's not just a Seattle thing?
That sounds like a Seattle thing.
No, it's a British thing.
Because like mince, like they talk about the type of meat, like you mince the meat.
Look it up. Mince meat is not actually meat. It's dried fruit.
It is here, at least. I know that.
Wild.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, it is kind of funny because Mince is, in some context, it is not vegetarian, and she is vegetarian. But then,
and
in
she
other
runs
context,
like every day.
It is vegetarian. Well, not.
But I also like Gold's inner monologue during that whole scene where he's like, well, "Am I going to come back? Maybe I'll come back."
And, like, I'm going to have a questionnaire for several hours.
You have to keep trying not to fall to her temptation. She's just gorgeous.
So there was one section that one section that I quite liked. I'm just gonna. There's a character in the bar. Seated alone with his back to the rear wall is a gray hooded figure, face hidden in shadows. The gray cloak covering his shoulders was threadbare. From Gold's position, the man's right leg was visible from the knee down, moccasin clad, a large hunting knife sheathed alongside the calf. The man's lean, long-fingered hands, wrapped around a tankard, were deeply tanned and scarred. An unstrung longbow leaned against the wall behind him. Frowning, Gold stepped forward, but was brought up short by the guardsman's hand. No, not him. That one. That guy was totally Aragorn.
Yes.
Strider.
Yeah.
Yep.
100%. That was a good joke, Steve. Well done. I didn't laugh or smile, but I thought, this tickles my fancy.
Sorry. The Ratters are funny. I really like the Ratters and their soul taken guy that the demon eats and then spits out when Balgalad's like, spit that out.
The rat catcher people are not human, are they?
They're liches.
Okay, they are liches.
Yeah.
Got it. That was a nice thing
like that. Yeah, that was funny.
I like the atmosphere and the setting in general.
Yeah.
The setting is good. I will agree with that for sure.
I mean, when I was reading it, there are parts of it that I just couldn't help but actually just read aloud because the dialogue in this story really, like, aside from the setting, the dialogue was another key component that made it so enjoyable. Just the back and forth. You know, I mean, we know Erickson is good at writing banter. And yeah, there's a particular scene that I was just like, okay, you have to read this out loud. I can't just read it in my head.
Speaking of which, the scene where Gold tries to get out of Balcalane and he threatens Mansi, that was also really well done.
I loved that scene.
I do like that the Gold is not, like, dumb, you know? He is very capable, and that makes it fun to follow. But it's also not like, oh, I'm so smart, let me show you how smart I am. You also see the sides of him where he's like, wait, could it be that? You know, he's second guessing or like having some tangential thoughts. And
yeah, he's talking with Ofen the first time, and he's going through like a list of people in his head that he like has like the faintest idea that might be. He said, tell the king that I have a list of suspects.
All the mages in the city.
Didn't get the joke about the him telling the corporal to go strangle the monk until like the third read. And it was because of the audiobook. Because when you're reading it, like it feels like when you switch chapters, you're done with the previous chapter. But in the audiobook, it's like seamless. Mm-hmm. He's talking about the monk ringing the bells. The bells are like going off over and over and over. And it goes, so the audiobook like is reading about the bells, and then it's immediately Gold saying, Corporal, go strangle that monk. That's blah, blah, blah.
It took me until now to get that joke.
It takes till the end of the chapter for him to say in his head. So like, and it's quite a beefy chapter too for this book. And he gets to the end of it and he's like, oh no, I hope that corporal didn't take my order literally. And I like flipped back to it, but I didn't flip back to the bells ringing. So I was like, what is he talking about? And finally on the audiobook, because of how seamless the narration is, I was like, oh, it's referencing the previous chapter. Like, oh, I get it.
Speaking of chapters, definitely read this faster because the chapters were so short.
Yeah, when I say beefy, it's like 3 minutes long. You know,
it's not that dense.
I love the opening. Just the first chapter, the prologue, or whatever you want to call it. It's nothing but description, but it's very, very Steve. And I thought it was beautiful. And talking about the bells and the city and giving on a very atmospheric take on what's going on. And yeah, I liked it.
I'm reading this at like this provided a minor interlude to my read through of Infinite Jest. And that is a contrast. This is like the length of like one Infinite Jest chapter or maybe even sentence.
Oh, the whole story is?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm exaggerating with the second part, but I mean, David Foster Wallace can really write a run-on sentence.
Wait till you get to the end of Ulysses. The final chapter is, I think, hours long, and I believe it's 7 sentences.
That's not proper writing.
It is. It's wonderful. Actually, my favorite chapter.
Disgusting.
You just gotta read it. You should read it first. And then,
talking about Erickson, okay? Erickson.
Let's discuss it. It's a promise.
We're talking about the short story writer actually writing a short story.
Yes, exactly. It was beautiful. Yeah. You know,
sort of
a short story. I get to finally like see him do something that he was just like really good at.
Wow.
Well, ouch.
What a backhanded compliment.
I'm so glad I read something from Steve that wasn't trash. No. Whereas I'm sitting here, I'm like, this might be my least favorite thing he's ever written.
Agreed.
Oh no, this does this is reminiscent of Gardens, like the action,
yes,
the like character POVs and stuff, which is probably why I really enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, well, this
bodes well for you liking the rest of the series then.
Okay.
To speak to that, it really does feel, the rest of the series feels a lot more like Monty Python. And the more you go, the more that's true. It's like Monty Python and Blackadder humor, but with Mads Mikkelsen as Hannibal and Eddie Izzard as his eunuch sidekick. And like, that's the...
And just a strange cast of characters every book.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you notice at the end of this book, they're getting followed by people and they're trying to stay out. That continues.
Okay.
AP Canavan becomes part of it too.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mads Mikkelsen as Bachlin is a good point.
The audiobook narrator hits that pretty close. It's a little more Dracula than Mikkelsen as Hannibal, like just a tad, but it's pretty close. Like it's close enough that I can like force the Dracula image away and make it Mads Mikkelsen while I'm listening to it. So
the Cornwall Brooch is pretty good too. Like this creepy child high-pitched thing.
Oh, interesting. That's not how I imagined it.
I'm definitely more a fan of Bachlin than I am of Corporal Broach.
Oh, definitely. Same. I think everybody is. But Corporal Broach is nice to be there. It's best that we mostly interact with Balkalain because Corporal Broach is so strange and so monstrous. Like, Balkalain is just as monstrous if not more, but because he's such an interesting persona and so, I don't know, civilized, I'm putting in heavy air quotes right here, that he's fun to read.
Yeah, he's also... go ahead.
No, go ahead.
He's also like a moral character, even though he's evil. He has like a really strong like moral code, which is displayed somewhat in his interactions with Quickbin and Memories, but... You get a lot more of it later, particularly in Healthy Dead, I think. Whereas Corporal Broach just seems like a creature of urges and like, you know, instinct. It, like, there's no morality to it. He's just like, I want to do what I want to do, and if people get in my way, can we please kill them so that I can keep doing what I want to do?
Bit of that where, at the end, right, Bacalan's like, no, we're not going to kill the rat people. And no, we're not gonna kill Gold. Like, this is not, it's not gonna turn out well. And
that's more expedience and logic, but also Broach doesn't have that either, right? So, like, I feel like that's less morality. Well, maybe a little with his respect for Gold, but he gets a more defined morality a little later. Like, he has like his ideas about power and like how it should be wielded and things like that.
I think that comes from more like self-righteousness is the wrong word, but like a sense of self that thinks he's better than everybody else. And so he wants to prove that.
Oh, sure.
I didn't really get that read, but
I do think he does think he's better than a lot of other people, but much like the Hannibal character in the Mads Mikkelsen Hannibal, I do think like he does have a moral code, even if it's not like one I would share. Like there's like an ethics to what he's doing.
It's very much lawful versus chaotic evil.
Oh, well, yeah. If you want to put it in D&D terms, which I guess is fitting where
I don't particularly like D&D alignments, but I think this is one case where it's like, ah, I can see exactly where they got these contrasting personas from.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's also because he is a scholar, right? And so he is like, he has that academic perspective, that rigor. So it makes sense that he does have this, okay, this side is not good, this side is good. Like, I'm okay with this, I'm not okay with this.
Yeah. Like, this guy, just imagine Hannibal, and like, I don't think there's much of a gap between like what Hannibal's like and what he's like, that it just works perfectly.
I think he's more ethical than Hannibal is.
You really think so?
Yes. I love Mads Mikkelsen's Hannibal. That's like one of my favorite shows. I think that Hannibal is basically pure evil. And his evilness is only mitigated somewhat by his curiosity and his twisted affections for certain characters.
Okay.
Kind of question, like, why did Erikson choose this kind of, not this kind of character, but this kind of, like, horror to write in a comedic way?
I think he just has a dark sense of humor. I just think this is what he finds amusing.
Yeah, I mean, the Book of the Fallen doesn't have, like, a strong... Like, I don't think most of the humor in it is very dark. I think the soldier's humor can be. But this feels like kind of, like, a different strain. Usually, mm-hmm. He's very serious with, you know, people getting massacred and dismembered and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, maybe this is just, like, the one outlet he could find for it. And he needed that kind of catharsis.
Well, because it's, like... I'm not really looking for themes, you know, when I read this short story. I'm not really looking for, like, oh, here's the message that Erikson potentially wanted to get across. It does feel like this was just written for fun.
Yeah, I agree. That's probably one reason why I am probably more lukewarm enough than that.
Yeah, I didn't see anything from here. Although the motif of the bell certainly rung a bell.
Mm.
I don't know what it meant, what it was symbolizing, other than annoyance.
Isn't, like, when you ring a bell, it's usually either celebratory or there's danger, right? It's an alarm. And
or
so,
it's mourning.
Or mourning, yeah. Which so I guess in this case, it was really just, there was a lot of mourning.
Okay.
Because there was, like, was it, like, a death, at least one murder every night for, like, 12 straight?
In the end, there's, like, 13 deaths, isn't there?
So it was 11 deaths at the beginning when we started, and then at the end. Because this happened over the course of, what, 2 days?
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So then.
So, yeah, ends on lucky number 13.
You think that was intentional?
Yes.
See, this is another reason why Erikson is similar to Taylor Swift. Okay, I'll stop.
I want to know. go on.
Oh, 13 is Taylor Swift's lucky number.
Oh, okay.
She has so many things that are 13 related. Hmm. If you really want to know, I can send you a video.
that's enough for me.
17-hour deep dive.
Yeah, she was born December 13th, and she takes it pretty, pretty far. Anyway.
Gotta get your inspiration somewhere.
The princess. That was unexpected for me, where...
she's a BDSM enthusiast.
Worse than that, she's... like, really into gore.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, some people are into that.
Especially people in positions of power, it seems.
It's a very interesting inclusion.
And she found somebody, and he was murdered.
and then she got infatuated with a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a eunuch. Oh.
Wasn't meant
I really
to be.
Like that part, where it was like, what do you think you could offer him?
Yeah, like, what was she thinking? He would just have killed her. That's it.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Like, people have obsessions with murderers all the time, and
that is true.
I would have liked that to be, like, something that got... I don't know. I feel like if you're going to include something like that, you should have at least one POV from the princess's perspective. Because, like, as is, it's just like, oh, I guess that was kind of a weird thing.
Maybe that's where he drew the line. Where Erikson drew the line. He's like, you know, I'm okay writing this character from the outside, but if I were really to get in their head.
He just kind of feels weird and gross doing it, yeah.
Too sexual.
I'm not in the right mind, frame of mind for this kind of story.
Now let me go back to writing Dust of Dreams.
Wait, actually, I didn't even look. Like, when was this written?
It was while he was writing the Book of the Fallen, I think. I think
only like, after Memories of Isaac or
something like that.
No, mine is a collection of the first three, so I don't know when this was written.
Oh, did you also get this from the Humble Bundle?
Oh, no, I found it at a used bookstore.
Oh, nice.
I was very surprised, and I immediately grabbed it.
Yep.
Oh, 2002. No, that's 2002. Fairly early on.
Yes. Yeah.
Imagine after Deadhouse Gates or Memories of Ice.
Well, I guess Ice, right? Maybe this was his outlet. Like, he's like, I wrote really, really heavy stuff. Let me go and...
Memories was 2001. So yeah, okay. I guess he started on the Bogland stuff like right after introducing them.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
We should call him back and talk about all of these.
Mm.
That would be cool.
Okay.
Not for just this one though.
No.
Just this one story.
By the way, they do develop some messaging as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so I heard Crackpot Trail is
Crackpot like Trail. Oh, yeah. It's so good.
I'm just saying for Crackpot Trail.
So that's the sixth one?
I think it's a fourth or fifth.
Fifth. Okay. Yeah. And Healthy Dead is, I think, the one before it. And that one is all about, like, people who try to, like,
health fascists
impose healthiness on everyone around them.
Okay. Like, oh, is Mint's going to make a return?
She should, but no, it takes place in a different city.
Oh, boo.
So, yeah, you can see the theme starting in this one. But it's, like, very. Minor that you have an entire like dictatorship of health fascists in one city in Healthy Dead.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's really good.
I think maybe I'll end up liking this one the least out of all of the
or maybe it'll be novellas. Like the Book of the Fallen and you like the first one the most.
Maybe. But it is like reintroducing these characters, like giving some backstory, you know, so it's a setup. It's to me, it's very much a setup story. So mm-hmm. We'll see where the rest of this goes. I'm gonna give an analogy, but I don't think anybody else is gonna care. It's like the Boxcar Children books, where like the first book of the Boxcar Children, you're like, this is it. It's a setup. Like after that, it's like. They go and solve mysteries and stuff, but the first one is just very different from the rest.
I've missed you so much.
Yeah.
The second, yeah. The second one is the most like this one of the bunch, but I think it does start like with some of the funniness, like a bit more. It turns that up a bit.
Well, okay. You say second one, but I'm looking at the production order, and the second one's actually The Healthy Dead, if we're going by when it was written and published.
That's interesting, but chronologically, the second.
The Leaves Will After End is like immediately after this one.
Yeah.
So in my book, it's Blood Follows, The Leaves of the Laughter, The Leaves of Laughter's End, and then The Healthy Dead.
Mm. Oh, that's in the first volume. Okay.
Yeah.
Third. Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Okay.
And then fourth, it says Crockback Trail, and then The Worms of Bleeroth, and The Fiends of Nightmaria, and then Upon the
Dark. Oh, okay. I guess it's been a while since I've read these.
So I guess when they put this together, they put it in chronological order instead of publishing order. I don't know. I don't really care what order we tackle it in.
I like
this. Do they have continuation from one to the other, aside from obviously this is the first?
Yes. Like The Leaves Laughter End, like we said, takes place immediately after them. Like the nails in the boat are kind of important. And then Crackpot Trail, they're being followed again by other people in another story. And then The Fiends of Nightmaria, they're being followed by the people in Crackpot Trail.
Okay.
I think The Healthy Dead is the most standalone, wouldn't you say? Maybe I don't remember The Worms of Bleermouth well enough.
I don't know if I read that one. I think I'm like in Fiends. I don't remember.
The ones that I mentioned at least are important chronologically, kind of.
Okay, cool.
Not like that. I don't want to say important, but like it's chronological purposefully.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to this book specifically, I did quite appreciate the part where Mansi is listening to the two wharf rats talking, and he's like, He's drinking his usual disgust with the two orph rats diminished steadily with each refilled tanker of foamy ale. He'd even begun to follow their conversation. Mm-hmm. And then their conversation turns out to just be world building and exposition dumps mm-hmm. about the city. Like, ah, yes, Steve does have a little bit of self-awareness about how his dialogue sounds to other people.
Yes.
I really like the Tower of Shades. And then Gold getting almost pulled over. And I liked when Mancy was trying to get a boat. He's talking to Krieg. And they seem suddenly very interested that he's leaving the city and about his wife, Subli. He's like, you know, what did he call his kids? Like the naked rats? He's like, mm-hmm. what are those naked rats really looks like, Krieg? Krieg's a good guy.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't tell him about it, needing to go to the alchemist, but he already knows. Hmm.
So, he's been away at sea for a while his... while his children were born, he doesn't think they're quite his, but they're kind of disgusted with the world, and that tracks with his demeanor.
He said that he's been raising them as their father, so that's enough.
That's enough for him.
There's a really good line. He says, their contempt for him was truly and surely sufficient proof of his fatherhood.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, good dad, Mancy. But also, that whole thing, like, kind of puts the incentive of them to help him find employment.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, if they're sleeping with his wife mm-hmm. and he's raising their kids,
yes.
like, they're like, well, we want you to be employed so that she's kept for us yes. to sleep with. And mm-hmm. also, so you're not there all the time.
Yes, so, but also pay for the alchemist for the children,
right?
Because yes, they care about the kids. Yeah. I know.
So at the beginning, like, they're pouring him drinks and they're like telling him about the job, and it seems benevolent. And then by the end, you realize it's because they want him out of the house and they want the money.
He's a good guy.
Will you guys indulge me? Can we do our dramatic reading?
Oh, yeah. What's the section? What's the chapter?
It's page 46 in the book.
They both turned as the fast approaching sound of shod hooves on the cobblestones. An armored rider appeared, boldly pushing his white charger past the guards. Good. What's the point of having a cordon of guards? The newcomer wore a white fur-lined cloak, a white enameled iron helm, and a coat of silver mail. The pommel at the end of the broadsword looked to be a single polished opal. Gold cursed under his breath, then called out to the rider.
What brings you here, Morsard?
The man reined in. He removed his helmet to reveal a narrow, scarred face and close-set eyes that glittered black. Those eyes now turned to the lantern-lit scene in the alley.
The foulest of deeds,
he rasped, his voice thin and ragged. The story went that a Drek assassin's dagger had come near to opening the man's throat a dozen years back. But Tulgord Vice, mortal sword to the sisters, had survived, while the assassin hadn't.
This is not a religious matter,
Gold said.
Though I thank you for your vow to scour the nights until the night killer is found.
Found, sir. Carved into pieces, this I have sworn. And what do you, cynical unbeliever, know of matters of faith? Do you not smell the stench of hood in this? You, Magus, can you deny the truth of my words?
Stol Ofan shrugged.
A necromancer, most certainly, mortal sword. But that doesn't perforce mean a whisperer of the god of death. Indeed, the priesthood disavows necromancy. After all, those dark arts are an assault on the warren of the dead.
Political convenience, that disavowal. You are a spineless, mewling fool, Ofan. I have crossed swords with Hood's herald. Or do you forget?
Gold noted one of his guardsmen flinch at that.
Well, Gord Vice,
the sergeant said.
Death was not the goal here, hasn't been all along.
What do you mean, sir?
I mean the killer is... collecting.
Collecting?
Parts.
Parts?
Organs, to be more precise, one generally considered vital to life, mortal sword. Their removal results in death as a matter of course. Do you see the distinction?
Tulgord Vice leaned on the horn of his saddle.
Semantics are not among the games I play, sir. If only organs are required... why then the destruction of souls?
Gold turned to the Magus.
Destruction? Stol Ofan?
The man shrugged uneasily.
Or theft, sergeant, which is of course more difficult.
But why steal souls if destroying them more easily serves the purpose of ensuring your inability to question them?
I don't know.
Telgord Vice settled back in his saddle, one gauntleted hand resting on his sword.
Do not impede me, sir,
he said to Gold.
My blade shall deliver what is just.
Better the madman writhe on the hooks,
Gold replied.
Unless he feels sufficient to the task of quelling a city's bloodlust.
This silenced the mortal sword, if only briefly.
They will sit well with my deed, sir.
It won't be enough, mortal sword. Better still if we drag him through every street. But it's not up to me in any case.
Gold added, stepping forward.
It's you who'd best stay out of my way. Interfere with me at your peril, mortal sword.
Telgord Vice half drew his weapon before Stull Ofans leapt close and stilled the man's arm.
Telgord, 'tis precipitous,
the magus bleated.
Remove your feeble grip, swine.
Look about you, sir. I beg you.
The mortal sword glanced around, then slowly resheathed his weapon. Clearly, unlike Stoll Ofan, he hadn't heard the locking of 6 crossbows. But the weapons were trained on him now, and the expressions on the faces of the Gold squad left no doubt as to their intent. The sergeant cleared his throat.
This is the 12th night in a row, mortal sword. It has, I believe, become very personal to my men. We want the killer, and we'll have him. So again, stay out of my way, sir. I seek no insult to you or your honor, but draw your blade again and you'll be dropped like a rabid dog.
Telgord Vice kicked Stull Ofan away, then wheeled his mount.
You mock the gods, sir, and for that, your soul will pay.
He put spurs to the charger's flanks and rode off.
That was fun.
That is not the voice that I had in mind for Gold, but okay.
That was a good one. That's like Benoit Blanc.
I definitely pictured Gold having the same voice as like a Kovian or somebody like that.
You don't picture a Kovian with a tortured Southern accent?
No. We'll just like cut out that snippet and then send it to Erickson. Happy birthday.
That's a submission. Please, sir, let us be your next audiobook narrators.
Hey, actually, if we really wanted to, it would actually be kind of fun to put on a play of this short story.
I mean, like, yeah.
There are podcasts that do that.
I agree.
It really does read like a play. We do need to make some adaptation because, as we could tell, we weren't sure who was supposed to say what line. So something that I was talking with like Craig and Drew from IOL about is the Travis Baldry episode that the Legendarium did, where they're talking about like when you're writing dialogue and some authors, like you could tell they didn't read it out loud to themselves, and there's just a lot of he said, she said, he sighed, after like all the dialogue. And I think Erickson for the most part is pretty good, where it's just like you can just have the dialogue, the voices are distinct enough where you can follow who is saying what without having the explicit marker of so and so said this.
Sometimes he's a little too sparse.
As like, we noted.
But most of the time it works.
Yeah.
But when it doesn't work, I'm like looking at the page like, you know,
I gotta follow
especially
back.
When he's got 3 different people and it's like going A, B, A, C, B, yes. A, C. Like it's like, just put a couple in there.
And you could give us like a giggle so we know it's Shadow Thrin. Yeah.
But
he never like writes out the giggle though, right? It's always like Shadow Throne giggled.
No, you say
so like
a raspy Dalhany's voice giggled. So you have come.
you might as well say Shadow Throne giggled at that point. Right?
I've become a bit more like discerning when I'm reading dialogue, like to just know how well the author is writing it so that it's not too, you know, like if you were read it to aloud, it would be too repetitive. And something that I noted when I was reading Accession by Ian M. Banks was he was really good about his dialogue and making his mm-hmm. voices very distinctive, where like you could even have like not even change in like paragraph, like breaks, and you could still tell who's saying what. So that's
Hear that, listeners. That's a little teaser for the Accession.
That's already out.
I think that episode will be out. It will be out. I think it's actually going out tonight. It'll be out when this episode comes out. So.
Yeah. Okay. That counts enough. Shall we? Should we say goodbye?
Yeah. I don't think there's anything else to say about this novella.
It's good. Probably the best. The worst of the bunch, though.
I think it's a nice getting back into that makes no sense. Getting back into Malazan. Like, it's low stakes, you know, it's not that hard. It's pretty fun.
It takes like 2 hours ready. To read.
Yeah, exactly. So then I can have the momentum to like keep reading and then eventually get to Orb Scepter Throne. And then you know, the rest from there.
And then Hall of Darkness.
I'm just doing this so we can eventually get to Crackpot Trail. So good.
You guys are gonna build it so much, and then I'm gonna hate it.
You might hate it. Like, it's weird. It's really weird.
Okay.
See how you could hate it. Like, of everything I've ever read in Malazan, it's the funniest. It's the most like D&D. It is. I literally just lifted it and made it a D&D encounter in my game. Like, or I mean, it was Savage Worlds, not D&D, but you know, same crap. Like, it was. And the players loved it and had no idea it was like fully plagiarized from Malazan.
That's the key to writing good material. Just hide your theft.
Yeah. Or you know, just give it to people who don't read.
Yeah. Right.
I guess.
All right. So that has been us. That's been a lot of fun. Seeing nice you guys talking to you guys again.
Yeah.
Hope the listeners like it. Maybe they finally start reading the Balkland and Quilver Brooch novellas just to listen to our beautiful voices do a rendition.
We could do a scene from every book. I like that idea.
I like the idea too.
Okay.
Well, let's keep
maybe going. There'll even be funny scenes in the future. Oh.
All right. So I am Huron Fan, and I am joined with Befuddle Panda.
Hi.
And Ash.
Bye.
And Janeth.
Goodbye.
And we're here to say thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye. I thought you forgot to do it in the beginning, so you were doing it now.
Did I forget to do it in the beginning?
Yeah.
I might have.
So that's why I said hi. But whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay. See you
next time.
Yeah.
Bye.
In the beginning, well, it was 11 nights, pain. 11 deaths.
Heron, can you not eat while we're recording? It's going to make it hard to edit. But yes.